WPKN 89.5 FM in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and streaming live at WPKN.org. Coming up next is In Context with Ken McDermuro, Gus Cantavero, the Public Affairs Call-In Show, streaming live with listeners from Beirut to London, from Beijing to Bridgeport, only on WPKN.
No one likes us. I don't know why. We may not be perfect, but heaven knows we try. But all around, even our old friends put us down. Let's drop the big one and see what happens. We give them money, but are they grateful? No, they're spiteful and they're hateful. They don't respect us, so let's surprise them. We'll drop the big one and pulverize them. Asia's crowded and Europe's too old. Africa's far too hot and Canada's too cold. And South America stole our name. Let's drop the big one. There'll be no one left to blame us.
And good afternoon with those wise words from Randy Newman. My name is Ken McDermott Rowe. The name of the show is In Context, WPKN's live public affairs call-in show. I believe we have my co-host, Gus Cantavero, on the line.
Hey, guys. Sorry I can't be with you today. I'm currently on assignment.
All right. Thanks very much for joining us by phone. And behind the boards is our board operator and military affairs commentator, Marshawn McDermott Rowe.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Anybody who's listened to our show knows that we've often covered the war and in particular shown how the desire to control oil is a main driver of U.S. foreign policy. In fact, 2/3 of the oil used in the United States goes for transportation, notably automobiles. So fuel efficiency of our cars is not just important to our personal budget, it has a great impact on public affairs issues, including our war policy. So in today's program, we're going to examine how well we've done in improving U.S. auto fuel efficiency and what the future looks like. To help us examine this important issue, we're very fortunate to have with us WPKN's resident auto expert, Bob Costanzo, who hosts Car Bob every other Saturday on WPKN from 9 to 11 in the morning with Doug Eccles. Bob, thanks very much for being with us on In Context today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Let's go back to 1973, the first OPEC oil embargo in the United States. That was the organization set up to as a cartel for oil producers. At that time, the cartel brought the U.S. economy to its knees with this embargo. We had fuel lines, our economy went into a terrible recession, and we became aware of how dependent we were on unimported oil. And at that time, U.S. cars averaged about 12 miles per gallon of gas. Bob, how much improvement has there been in U.S. car fuel efficiency since then?
There's been quite a bit of fuel efficiency since 74. The average now is somewhere in the low 20s, low to mid-20s right now, but it could be better.
Yeah, how could it be better, do you think?
To take it not out of context, but to shift a little bit, the European Union in 1999 mandated that all car manufacturers in Europe by 2009 had to achieve a 40 mile per gallon fuel average across the board.
Would this apply to just new cars? In other words, the existing cars on the road could be fuel inefficient.
Exactly.
So just the new car fleets had to come up with an average of 40.
Right. And something before, I think even before we get into that, let's talk about the average. A lot of people don't understand where that average comes from. The average is based on a manufacturer's entire production, not just one model. So they have to average from their most fuel efficient to their worst vehicle. And then they have to meet that average, which I think now in the United States is 32. No, it's less than that. 20, 28, something like that.
To follow up on that, if your big item is the Hummer and you get 10 miles per gallon and you sell lots and lots of them, does that get averaged the same as,
yes,
as your most fuel efficient car that nobody buys?
Right. So they can only produce, they have to figure their production so that by the end of the year, all their cars, the average is what the government mandates.
I see. The average that they actually sold.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So that is why they only sell so many Corvettes. That is why they only produce so many Hummers. Because they know that that is going to skew the average.
Sure, it'll drag it way down.
Way down. So they try to encourage, in some respects, buy the fuel-efficient little car. But what happens is the people don't want the little car. The people want the big car.
Sure.
And so they're going to pay a premium to have that big car. I'm going to go back to the European thing. The European thing, when they mandated this, the manufacturers got online. And the manufacturers, with the oil companies, developed engine and oil technologies to allow their motors to get that 40 miles to the gallon. And there was really no question asked. Well, you're going to do it or you're not going to produce cars. I mean, that's basically what they said. The problem we have in this country is lobbyists. The lobbyists, you know, you're going to get 40 miles to the gallon. Then the lobbyists go to Washington and say, oh, Senator, we can't have that. We can't do it. We can't do it. What do you mean you can't do it? And so they lobby to keep the mileage down. That's what's happening right now.
So in your view, it's not so much a technological limitation, but it has to do with the power of the lobbyists, I guess, the oil industry and the car industry. The oil industry and the car industry, they seem to have the same interest in...
Absolutely. Let's sell. If we sell more cars, we sell more gas.
And one thing I noticed when my family was over in Ireland a few years ago and we were driving, I think it was a Japanese car, I think a Toyota, five people and lots of luggage comfortably, and it seemed like I never had to refill the gas. I think we were getting close to 60 miles a gallon.
Yep. There are some cars in Europe now that we can't bring into this country that are between 60 and 90 miles per gallon.
And why can't we bring them into this country?
Some of the issues seem to be safety. I'm not sure on that.
Can I interject here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sure, go ahead.
I have a question that I recently read an article about a Passat wagon. I think they call it the Green Drive or Green Wave or something like that, and it's a diesel, and it gets about 60 to 65 miles per gallon. Obviously, they run on liters there instead of gallons, so you got to kind of average it out or whatever, but or convert the measurements. But the reason why they can't sell it here is because the emissions per gallon is exceeding of the emissions limitations. However, the caveat there is that you're getting double the mileage per gallon, so you're burning half the fuel. So that seems to be a government red tape regulation that's completely misapplied and completely wrong. And instead, this article that I read was essentially asserting that it's the gas taxes that the government is really after here. So they don't want these extra fuel-efficient vehicles to be sold here, even though they're just as big and have just the same capacity and just the same power as an American car.
Yeah, I shouldn't have said can't sell them here. They could sell them here. Their emissions, you know, are pretty close to what we have here. Those cars, though, don't have all the amenities that people want. They don't have the power windows and the electric seats and the 25 cup holders and all the other junk that goes with it.
Hey, I'll take 65 miles a gallon.
Right. They also have very small motors. A lot of them have smaller motors. And their excuse is those motors will not be good for our highway system because we travel so fast, which is total not true, but that's what they claim.
Yeah, I wonder if...
Yeah, you try driving on 95 on rush hour, you'll see how fast you go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I wonder, is this really what the American people want? I remember I got a call from GM. It was a market survey. I had a Buick Century, and it had manufacturing defects. Yeah, from the get-go, there was a problem with the electrical system. It was always in and out of the shop. And I said, geez, what do you want to know? And they said, well, we have these questions. And they had to do with the color of the upholstery, you know, the display, all this cosmetic stuff that I wasn't interested in. I said, can't you ask me substantive questions about the quality of the car? And she said, well, no. She said, at the end of the survey, we give me a chance to tell you what's wrong with this car. And it doesn't have to do with the color of the upholstery. And she said... She said to me, oh, okay, so at the end of the... I said, look, this car discovered... It must have been manufactured on a Friday. It had actually a break in its electrical system. The alternator constantly went out on it. It was in and out of the shop. It cost me thousands of dollars to finally get it fixed because they didn't know where the problem was. And her response was, if you don't like our cars, don't buy them.
Wow.
That's what the marketing person from GM told me. And I said, wow. I said, the color of the upholstery. So I wonder, are these features that they've convinced us that we want?
Absolutely. It's all about marketing.
They went bankrupt. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You call that customer service?
It's all about marketing.
So much for the customer always being right.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Let's put it into kind of a perspective here. And this is probably going back maybe 15 years or so, but their fuel-efficient little tiny car from General Motors, they would make maybe $1,000 profit on it, if they were lucky. On their little tiny, back then it was like the Cavalier or whatever it was.
Right, the Cavalier.
They sold you a 2500 series pickup truck. They're going to put 10 grand in their pocket in profit.
Wow. It's that margin.
Yes.
And what was that getting?
Oh, yeah, I've heard that.
What was that getting in terms of fuel efficiency?
12, 14, they didn't care.
Yeah.
But they were making the profit.
This is exactly why Bush offered the tax credits for people to go out and buy really fuel efficient, inefficient, giant SUVs, because it was a bailout for the car company.
Absolutely.
They made massive profits on these SUVs.
The gas prices went up. People stopped buying the big cars, the big trucks. But now we're going to make some kind of incentive so they can. And that was what that whole tax thing was.
Speaking of Bush Jr., as you look at the president since, I guess, Nixon was in power when the first embargo hit, which presidents have been strong on improving fuel efficiency?
Carter, probably. He tried. I don't know of any others.
How about Obama setting these new targets? What is it, like 39 miles to the gallon, something like that?
And even that, I think, is on the low side. We could do better than that. I think they're being too conservative, in my personal opinion. They can do much better than that.
Yeah, that was 2011. His long-term goal is an average economy of, 54.5. That's for going out to the year 2025, long after he's left office.
Right.
That won't be his problem.
Exactly. You know, but the American manufacturers now are saying, or 2 or 3 or 4 years ago, say, we can't do 35. And yet the European manufacturers came up with 40.
Let's take a look. I'm sorry, go ahead, Gus.
Hey, I was going to say, does this have anything to do with, the Northeast, the Northwest, we have massive mountains and ice, flows that happen, and there's lots of winter weather, and, we have a variety of terrain in this country. Is it because they feel like they can't meet the demand to keep people safely driving in the wintertime and so forth? I mean, I have a car that has four-wheel drive. It's a small SUV. I'm 6'4". I needed leg room, and I have to carry my equipment around because, I'm for my job. I couldn't get a small fuel-efficient car. And by comparison, my wife's car is a small fuel-efficient car, and she jumped a curb 2 weeks ago and did $3,000 of damage. So, I really don't feel very safe in small cars, to tell you the truth.
Well, that's a lot of people tell me that. I'm sure if you're going to take an 18-wheeler and get hit in a small car, you're going to be dead.
Sure,
you get hit in a pickup truck with an 18-wheeler, you're going to be dead. It doesn't matter.
Well, yeah.
It's mass and energy, and you guys know this. The basic problem, I think, personally, is driver education. The driver education in this country is terrible. I mean, anybody can go out and get a license, and you don't even have to know how to park a car, basically. If you're breathing and you can pay the fee, you got a license.
Yeah, if you've seen the vast majority of people out there on America's highways today, it's mind-boggling how some of them get licensed.
Yeah, it's terrible. They're just no sense of rules of the road, no common courtesy, nothing. They just, here I am, I got a car, and I'm driving. Get out of my way.
What I think is interesting, the Autobahn, which has no speed limits, has actually fewer accidents than I-95.
It does now.
It does now?
The Autobahn, about 2 years ago, they put a speed limit on it because there were too many cars and too many accidents.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow. So it was the number of cars.
Congestion then, really.
Yeah, they're having their congestion problems also over there.
That is interesting.
Yeah, that happened 2 or 3 years ago.
In America, we have barely a public transportation system, a mass transit system. I mean, really, barely. It's just in and around the hub cities. But even there, they're jam-packed. And people live so far away, and the systems don't go to where people live, that you still have to end up driving in. So, we have a catastrophe here of transportation. The roads are jammed, and they're aging, and they're so packed that they don't even have a chance to work on them.
Right, exactly.
Well, Bob, let's take a look at some of the technologies that hold promise for improving fuel efficiency. Let's look at electric, for example. What do you think of the Volt, the new electric car?
I like the idea of the Volt being electric. I don't particularly like the way they did it, but I like the idea. And I think electric is going to be the answer, but we need improvements in some serious technology.
How much mileage? The Volt is all electric, right?
No.
The Volt is
all electric.
No, that's
the thing.
It has a gas. Okay. So I get in my Volt. How far can I go before the gas engine?
I think it's about 40 miles.
Okay. So it's not too far.
No. And then what happens is the gas motor will work just to charge the batteries to keep the electric motor going.
I see. So if I were to drive a long trip, do we have an idea what the effective gas mileage would be?
They're claiming like 200-300 miles to the gallon, but I don't know exactly. I have not done that research on that yet.
Is there any prospect of a truly all electric car, or is it the technical limitation?
Well, we have a couple out there now.
You wouldn't want to be stranded, right?
Well, that's the thing. You don't want to be stranded. There are a couple of all electric vehicles, quite a few actually, all electric vehicles out there. The Tesla being the most popular.
Okay, talk about the Tesla. Could tell us about that?
The Tesla was developed. I can't think of the gentleman's name. Made a lot of money in computers, I think it was, and then decided to start a car company. That is a fully electric car. Some innovative technology behind that, and he is able to get well over 100 miles to a charge with the little sports car.
I've seen it on the road.
Yeah, I've driven it. Doug and I took a test drive in those things. It's a beautiful car. We actually drove the car around Stanford for about 45 minutes to an hour. And when we got back to the test site, we had just as much electricity in the battery than when we started because of the regenerative system.
So you think it might do better than 100 if you just were driving?
If you drive normal, yeah. Some guys were saying they do really well.
I see.
They've got the S model. I think it's the S model coming out right now. Which is a sedan, 5-passenger sedan, fully electric, with the optional battery packs they claim over 300-mile range.
And the optional, okay.
What would the cost of one of these cars be?
The base model that has a range of about, I think, about 120 miles is around 50, 55. And then there's, I think it's a $10,000 to $12,000 additional fee for the next, for the package, and then there's a package after that, it's another 12. So you get up to about 85, and you can get the 300-mile range in a 5-passenger.
Okay, so
electric.
You're talking probably more than double what the average person expects to spend for a car.
Exactly.
What does it take?
So the offset of fuel there is like not even coming into a factor.
Well, you know, one of the things that really gets me is the efficiency end of it, and I talk about this a lot on my show. An internal gasoline combustion engine back in the 60s, had an efficiency of about 25%. We're now at about 19% due to emission controls, alcohol in the fuel, and all the other stuff.
What does that mean, the efficiency?
Here's the way I explain it to my students. For every dollar you put in the gas tank to move you down the road, 19 cents is used to get you down the road as power. The rest of the money, the rest of the 81 cents, is lost as heat energy.
And there's not much that can be done about that?
Nothing can be done about that. They've been working on this for over 100 years. And actually, the efficiency has dropped because of emissions and fuel. So you look at an electric vehicle, the worst one out there is 80%. So for every dollar you put in the tank, or every dollar of electricity you put in the battery or whatever, 80 cents of that gets you down the road. The other 20 cents is lost as heat energy.
And that's really important, because ultimately you're going to plug that Tesla in to a wall, right?
So right.
You're going to get a little electricity, and that electricity could be generated it could be from
anywhere.
Hydropower, it could be from solar, it might be from coal, you don't know.
Right.
But it gives you a lot of flexibility.
Absolutely. Now, the problem becomes the infrastructure. The infrastructure isn't there. Where do you go to plug in your car?
Right.
But right now, contracts have been put out. They are working on it as we speak. Charging stations are being put up along the Northeast Corridor between Boston and Washington. They're working on it slowly. New stores that are being built, like Whole Foods, they build a new store. They put charging stations in front of their store. You go to shop at Whole Foods, plug in your electric car. free electricity while you're shopping.
Bob, why don't we open the phone lines as we discuss this and see if some of the listeners would like to chime in on fuel efficiency, what their experiences may be. Maybe they have questions about what car they think you should, that they might buy that would improve their budget on fuel.
Right.
Our call-in number is 203-336-9756, 203-336-9756. And if you just tuned in, you're listening to In Context, a live public affairs call-in show on WPKN 89.5 FM, streaming at WPKN.org. I'm your host, Ken McDermott Rowe. I'm here on the phone with our co-host, Gus Cantavero, and our guest is WPKN's own Car Bob Constanzo. We're talking about car fuel efficiency. So if you have a question, give us a ring, or if you prefer to email us, you can always email us, Ken@mdrtalk.org. That's Ken@mdrtalk.org, and we'll read your question, your comment on the air. The Tesla technology with the super pack for $85,000 that can go 300 miles, is that a technology that could be made more economical and become standard?
It'll get economical with the numbers. The more they produce, the cheaper it's going to get to produce.
Because that relates to the charging station issue, because if you can go 300 miles, then that's pretty far.
I mean,
how far do you figure a car needs to go on a charge before it really replaces your conventional gas engine?
I'm going to say 150 to 200.
Okay. That's
or have the ability to stop if your charge gets low and charge the car rapidly.
Yes.
Now,
that's an issue. How long would a Tesla take to recharge?
It depends. Then? Now, the different charging stations, you can 120 volts, 240, or 440, I think it is. Okay, 480, whatever it is. The lowest voltage takes the longest amount of time, usually overnight. But some of these 440, 480 charging stations can do your car in 20 minutes.
I see. So what would you have at home would probably be an
overnighter.
Okay.
And the ones on the road that you pull up to, you know, fast charge, bang, 20
minutes.
I see.
Well, then we'd be getting someplace. Do we have a phone call, Marchand?
Yes, we do. This is John from Bridgeport. Go ahead, John. You're on the air with WPKN.
Hi, John. Thanks for calling.
Hi, John.
Oh.
Yeah,
hello. Hello, John?
Hey. You there? Okay. My bad. I hit the wrong button.
Hi, John. Bob? You're on the air.
Hi. Is this working?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. You're on the air with Car Bob Costanza.
Yeah. Right. You suggested that I'm getting some feedback. Hang on. You suggested the president that did nothing and did something for gas mileage and how actually Bush, like Bob said, raised the allowances for gas guzzlers, and Obama did bring it down with his. And I want to say because he gave that incentive for buying get the clunkers off the road, the big gas burners. I bought a Prius because I saved $4,500 plus taxes to own a Prius to get 40 something miles to the gallon.
Right.
And I got rid of a Toyota 4Runner that was getting about 12.
Okay.
So I think Obama will go down in history as really the first president, like you said, besides Carter, to do something about efficiency. And like Bob said, the people who were making cars said, oh, we can't drop the mileage. It'll cost too much. We can't do that. So they almost went out of business not doing that. I mean, they never did it, and they almost went broke.
Right.
And now they're producing efficient cars, and they did it in a couple of years, and that's all they had to be. They don't want government to tell business what to do, but here's an instance where government told business, you've got to do better on this mileage.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it. They did it in a couple of years, and now we got cars, American cars, that are getting, 40 miles to the gallon. So it can be done, and all that crap that they tell you that, it's going to be too costly is crap.
Well, yeah, but, on the other hand, the government sends a complete mixed message to the auto industry because they go ahead and they bail them out after they prove that their terrible customer service and not responding to market demands almost caused them to go out of business. So they go ahead and bail them out anyway. I mean, the car companies don't feel like they have to respond or listen to anything someone like Obama or Bush says, because they know that they'll always be protected, just like the banks.
Well, I don't think they will. I don't think they'll get a second shot around. I mean, for the 8 years that Bush was in there.
The auto industry will too. Industry always wins. Government always kowtows to special interests.
Excuse me, General, one second.
Hold on, an ultimatum on the gas thing, and it's working. It can be done.
Jimmy John, I just want to see if Karbob has a take on your, and we'll have to end the call there, but I just want to see what Karbob's take is on what you said. Thanks for calling, John.
I don't want to say that Obama didn't do anything. I think he's tried, but because of the special interests, because of the lobbyists and everything else, they seem to be pulling all the strings these days. And that's one of the issues I think the people in this country need to wake up.
Wait, is the emissions restriction, is that just something that's used by the car industry, the oil industry, to keep out other cars, these more efficient European cars? Is there a real a pollution question there, do you think?
I don't think that's the whole issue. I think
don't forget these more efficient cars are made by the exact same companies. This, I believe, is a collusion with the government because they need the gas tax to keep running.
Right. You know, there's a couple of issues here. Number one, most of the roads in Europe are different than what we have here. You know, we have these highways that are theoretically used to move people very quickly. It seems our whole since the 30s, that's what we've been doing. making cars to drive on the highways to get people to move faster. Europeans, smaller roads, you know, so their cars maybe they can go as fast. Shorter trips, they have to handle better. They have a better infrastructure for mass transportation in Europe,
right?
So the cars aren't used
as much.
So there
are important cultural differences.
There are a lot of cultural differences, and The Europeans have always this is what I want to say. The tax structure is totally different in Europe, and this makes a big difference. Our cars here are taxed on usually what their value is. So you buy a car new and you pay a lot of money, and then as the car gets older, the taxes drop. In Europe, you pay taxes on horsepower and weight.
I see.
And those two things don't change. So you are taxed the same every year. The other thing is, the tax money that they take from you for your car goes into roads.
So there's an annual tax on your car based upon how big it is, or
how big the engine is, and how heavy the vehicle weighs.
That would really orient people towards this more fuel-efficient car.
Exactly. Yeah. And then that money goes into the roads.
So, okay.
Here, they take that money, and it seems to just disappear in some black hole.
Absolutely. I believe, Gus, I believe we have another caller.
Yes, we do. This is Bob from Fairfield. Go ahead, Bob. You're on the air with WPKN.
Hi, Bob.
Okay. Hi, Bob. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Good, thank you. I have a real genuine interest in cars. I'm a member of a local car club, and I'm also a member of the Association of Motoring Enthusiasts. And I have formal education in engineering, and I worked for over 40 years as an engineer, and I teach part-time engineering at a local college. And there's one particular subject, okay, that is not really discussed too much, that has to do with improving gas mileage, and that's drag coefficient of cars.
Could you say that again, Bob?
Drag coefficient?
Well,
you know, drag force cars?
Well, if you look at the design of the vehicles,
excuse me, Bob, maybe you could explain for the audience who aren't as well.
The drag, you know,
the drag is, what happens as you increase speed and you have this opposing force to your forward direction. That's called drag force. It's caused by the wind essentially blowing it against the car and producing turbulence, and that's what pressure gets.
So aerodynamics in layman's terms?
Exactly, aerodynamics.
Exactly.
Okay, Bob, what's your take on that?
Bob, go ahead.
The manufacturers have made their cars, for the most part, much more aerodynamic than they used to be. They are getting better. There's only so far that they can go, actually, making the car still affordable. If you look at some of the European vehicles, the high performance stuff with the really sleek body lines and mirrors molded in and everything, those cars are incredibly aerodynamic. They're also incredibly expensive.
Very low drag coefficient.
But incredibly expensive.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like the Lamborghinis and the Ferraris and those cars, they have a very low drag coefficient, you know, down even in some cases, less than one.
Yep. Okay. They have gotten better, there's only so far they can do. And that's another reason all the cars, if you look at almost all the new cars today, they all look the same. because they punch into the computer, this is what we need for drag coefficient, this is what we need for holding passengers, this is what we got to do, and the computer spits out a design, and now we can just fine-tune it and make it, but they all look the same.
I see.
Because right, that's the only way, that's the best design. Right, that's the best design they can get for drag. Now, if we were at the auto show in April.
I was not there, but I know what you're speaking of. I have been there in the past.
Yeah, well, at the auto show, it was Kia, I believe, had a concept car with no rearview mirrors because the rearview mirrors create a lot of drag.
Sure.
What they had were these little stalks with cameras facing backwards that would show up on the screen on your dashboard. That reduced the drag.
Wow.
You know, so they're trying different ways, but in order to, it's like to get a better coefficient of drag, it's proportional. We got to spend a lot of money to do it.
Well, Bob of Fairfield, thank you very much for that call.
Thanks for the call,
okay,
Bob.
I appreciate it. Okay, and
bye-bye now.
Yep.
So, go ahead.
Gus, I don't want to leave you out because you're on the phone. Did you have a question for Car Bob?
Well, I think I also have a lot of thoughts about, and this I don't have a lot of research on, but suppressed technologies, patents that are bought and warehoused that could definitely improve mileage by a lot, but they're just chose not to be used.
That has come up a lot, and there's really no way to find out about that, but the logic goes that if you're a car manufacturer and I'm a car manufacturer and you have something that can get a step up on me and sell a lot more cars, I think you would pull that out and use it. What? And I find
it
hard.
What about, on the other hand, just rolling it out ever so slightly incrementally, just 5% a year, so that they can always have that ace up their sleeve?
That, I'm not sure on that one.
Bob, could you talk about the EV1, that General Motors car in the late 90s in California? It was an electric car.
The electric
now,
car.
I think they used a battery made by Ovshinsky. What was the story with that? Was a very popular car, and then GM stopped producing and literally destroyed
all the cars.
Could you tell that story?
That was about basically Who Killed the Electric Car, that movie.
Right.
Yeah. The EV1 originally came through with lead-acid batteries, and the batteries obviously weren't that efficient. It's like a golf cart. And they had some issues with their typical engineering. They skimped. They had some car fires because the charging paddle was not robust enough, and it would overheat and burn up. There were some issues like that. And then the guy that you mentioned,
Ovshinsky,
developed the lithium-ion battery. And GM bought the rights to that, but never used it.
Ah. Do we know what kind of a range he would have gotten with that?
We would have been where we are now, and this is possible 100 miles.
So this is like 15 years ago, I think.
But the interesting end of this is GM sold that lithium-ion technology originally to Texaco.
Right. So it
got buried by Texaco.
One assumes for an anti-competitive purpose. And
right.
One wonders, and I think this goes to what you're saying, Gus, are there oil companies sitting on patents to really good batteries that could revolutionize our...
That I'm not sure.
This is really what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Right. I've seen some seminars and stuff on some really interesting new battery styles. One of them is an air ion, I can't remember what the chemical was, battery. And they, as they're going through the seminar, the guy made a beautiful point. He goes, this battery can be recharged indefinitely. It'll never wear out.
Wow.
But who wants to put the money up if they can only sell the battery one time?
Right.
Well,
this was the scientist that developed the battery.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to In Context on WPKN 89.5 FM. We're a public affairs call-in show every Monday from noon to 1 p.m., except the first Monday of the month. My name's Ken McDermott. I'm online as our co-host, Gus Condivero. And our special guest today is Car Bob Constanzo, WPKN's host of Car Bob, which is on every other Saturday from 9 o'clock until 11 o'clock in the morning. That goes to the whole question of suppressed technology, and I'm wondering.
Well,
I had a while.
The point there is that, Ken, sorry. The point there is that you know, someone at some point is just going to have to do the right thing, you know.
Exactly.
They have these tremendous technologies. They're going to have to take one for mankind. You know, humanity is really who benefits here.
I agree with you, Gus. I think, you know, if we looked at this as in the context of war, and because we talk about the war all the time here in context, and fuel efficiency, oil dependency all relates to our foreign policy. It looks like we're maybe starting to attack Syria. We're trying to overthrow the government. Syria may be fighting Iran. Who knows? It could lead to confrontation and war with Russia.
It's actually probably worth mentioning that headline news right now from the BBC, U.S. warship fires on boat in the Persian Gulf off the coast of the United Arab Emirates
So we are really on the verge of a war. And the bottom line, it's about oil, despite whatever you hear from the government about humanitarian interventions and this other nonsense. It's about oil. So car fuel efficiency really goes to the heart of our most important public policy here. So why not have the government come in and condemn patents? If I was president, I'd find out. I'd make them tell me, these companies, oil companies, what patents they hold. I'd have my expert look at them. And if I thought they'd improve fuel efficiency, I'd have it condemned for the public purpose and then have it out there and manufactured.
That's an interesting point. And I think Gus mentioned this a little bit earlier in passing. I think I heard this correctly. The latest theory out there is that they don't want to improve the fuel mileage because all our road repairs are done on fuel tax.
Right.
So if we lower the fuel consumption, we lower the tax so we can't fix the roads.
This is crazy, isn't it?
And that cannot happen.
Right, exactly. That can't happen. That's why the other aspect in Europe, you know, could get the fuel tax. This is it. You pay by weight, you pay by horsepower, and all that money goes to repair the
roads. Wow, that's so much more sensible. If you'd like to chime in, give us a ring here at 203-336-9756. 203-336-9756. You can speak directly with Car Bob. If you want to ask him about, if you're thinking about getting a car, and a lot of our listeners are probably driving as they listen to us, pull over to the side of the road, use your cell phone, and give us a ring.
Please pull over before you do that.
And ask Car Bob what you think, you know, what his advice would be. If I was going to look for a car today, an American car, well, it doesn't matter, any car that would be available for sale in America, and fuel efficiency was my really a very high priority to me, and let's say I'm A, cost insensitive, or B, I don't want to spend more than about $35,000, what would such a what would these two people do?
I would look at a hybrid. I really would. I'm not sure whose, because the technology in almost all of them are pretty equal across the board. The one hybrid I don't really like a lot is the Honda system. I just don't like the way they did theirs, because in order to move the car, the engine has to be running. Whereas Toyota's, Ford's, even GM's Volt for a while, the car will move without the engine running.
I see. Well, we're talking about then the Volt, which is a hybrid. The Prius is a hybrid. How does that compare to the Volt, let's say?
Well, the Volt.
Well, other car SUVs and sedans that are also hybrid, but I don't think the mileage is even much more improved.
No, it's not. It's not greatly improved. What you got to remember, hybrid technology wasn't about mileage.
No.
Hybrid technology was about emissions and lowering overall emissions.
That's interesting.
That's what most people don't understand.
I did not understand that.
Hybrids.
Yeah, I mean, because people are cost conscious. Look at the economy. Come on, we're strapped right now. And if your average middle income or low income family wants to get a new car, they want to save money, not spend more in order to save the emissions.
Sure, exactly.
Sure. So I'm looking at a Prius, what kind of mileage would I expect to get?
The Prius is most people I know are getting high 40s.
So this isn't off. This is compared to, I think earlier, Gus mentioned a VW car. What was it? The Passat? The Blue Motion, I think it's called.
Yeah, the Blue Motion.
Right.
Okay.
Blue Motion.
And I saw an article that car claims to get like 70, over 70 miles per gallon.
Yep.
And this is an older technology, right? Isn't this? Is this diesel?
No, Blue Motion is the latest.
It's the latest. Okay. Well, why can the Blue Motion get the VW Blue Motion get
in,
that?
In actuality, the vehicles that are using Blue Motion, the mileage has actually dropped off a little bit.
Okay, so this is more of a claim.
The diesels overall get better mileage than gasoline cars. Diesel efficiency in some manufacturers is up to 50%.
Okay.
As opposed to the 19-20% that we get with gasoline.
So this is a diesel hybrid instead of a gas hybrid.
Exactly. It's a diesel hybrid.
What do you think of the future of that?
I see possibilities with that. I think that's the way to go. I've been talking about that for the last 20 years. That I think diesel hybrid is the way to go right now.
Interesting.
But
because of the higher fuel efficiency, because it gets 50% instead of
20%. 50% fuel efficiency on the engine. The problem becomes weight and cost. Diesels are usually heavier, and they usually cost more to produce. So there's a little bit of an offset.
But diesels are not anywhere in passenger vehicles in the U.S., are they? I mean,
not anymore. General Motors destroyed that market in the 70s.
How did they destroy it?
Thank you, GM.
Yeah. They came out when everybody was coming in with diesels right after the gas embargo. General Motors decided they were going to put a diesel out there, so they took their 350 gas engine and just made it into a diesel. And consequently, they were blowing up left and right. They had a class action suit against them. They had to settle for a lot of money, all these people that their cars just wouldn't work.
You know, and let's talk about how long a car lasts, too. I mean, I had a friend of mine with a Jetta TDI diesel. It was like a 90, and as of a year and a half ago, he was still driving it, and it had 270,000 miles on it.
My diesel out in the parking lot, it is a Mercedes diesel, is 403,000.
Wow.
Okay.
Original motor, original
original motor, 400,000. Obviously, it's not a hybrid. It's a
straight diesel, old technology diesel. Actually, not old technology because it was the start when they started putting on EDC, which are electronic diesel controls. It was just the beginning of that.
And what kind of mileage
So gasoline engines last, you know, let's be generous and say 170,000. That's if you really take good care of it. Most people are hard drivers and, you know, miss a lot of their maintenance. So they end up lasting more like 125, 130. And once you hit 100 on your odometer, you usually people are starting to think about a new car. It's all part of our disposable society, I think. I mean, you buy a refrigerator now, you're lucky if it lasts 8 years, right?
And in the old days, they used to last like 30.
Sure. Yeah, I don't want to replace my lawnmower. It's like 15 years old. I know I won't get another one that's good.
You had a question. I lost it because I was listening to Gus. I'm sorry.
Well, in terms of the diesel, the diesel gets a greater fuel efficiency. It's 50%. Mm-hmm. If you look to the future, then at least the near-term future, the best way to move maybe a hybrid diesel electric engine.
Yes.
And then maybe in the longer term, as this Tesla-like technology becomes cheaper, we would move on to all electric with refueling stations.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the way I see it going. But you have to remember there is no – I don't think there's going to be one fuel for the entire country.
Right.
You get out to Wyoming, you get out to Nebraska, where your towns are 100 miles apart, you know, gasoline may be the best bet, or diesel hybrid may be the best bet. You get into urban areas, New York, Washington, or the Northeast Corridor, electric will work once the charging stations are in place.
Yeah.
You know, diesels will last a lot longer. Gas and diesels, it's like two different animals. Everybody thinks they're pretty much the same.
Yeah,
but way they burn, the way the combustion takes place, and the way the motors are built, diesels are meant or are basically going to last a lot longer than a gas car.
But the diesel ultimately also comes from oil, right? So
exactly.
So you're not getting off the oil.
But you are doubling your fuel mileage with a diesel. Efficiency.
What's the mileage you get with your Mercedes?
This is a big car, 4,200 pounds, and I'll get 25 around town.
Okay, so that's a big car,
and that's not bad for this car.
That'd be compared to like maybe 18 for a gasoline version, right?
Probably more like 16.
So you're getting almost double what a similar gas car would get.
And on the highway, I can get 31 with it.
Now you mentioned earlier, August. Did you have a question?
I was going to say, I just had a thought. I mean, it's not so much a question, but moving to electric. I mean, we have brownouts when people run their air conditioners. I can't imagine everybody charging their electric cars.
You know, another thing is the infrastructure with the electric. We need to improve it. They have been doing that over the last 10, 15 years, been trying to improve the electric infrastructure, more transmission wires. But it becomes a problem with people don't want the electricity, the wires in their, not in my backyard. The cost of doing it is very expensive. So, you know, there's one.
Well,
all over the place.
Here's my technology / democracy dream, which is that we develop such highly efficient solar cells in our houses or other sources of energy, perhaps solar, that we can generate enough electricity so that it would provide electricity for our cars overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd make the average American much more autonomous. He'd be, we wouldn't get completely off the grid, but he'd become almost energy self-sufficient as to his house and his transportation.
Yeah, 30-40% off the grid. That'd be tremendous.
Yeah, that would be. And I think it would have political implications, too, because we wouldn't be in the palm of the hand, you know, be in the hands of the oil companies.
I had a similar conversation with someone actually about a week and a half ago. And they asked me almost the same question. What do I see coming down the road? What do I think would be the ideal solution? I see we need two developments to happen. We need fusion power. We need to develop fusion, which is basically a clean source of producing electricity. And we need a room temperature superconductor. Those are the two things. If we could get those two things developed, the electricity would not be a problem anywhere. Everything would fall into place.
Another thing we've talked about on the show a couple times is an alternative to nuclear power being thorium, which is a much more plentiful supply in the Earth's crust, and it's not radioactive in the same way. It cools itself down once the reactor stops running in case there is a disaster like a Fukushima, because you have to actually use some power in order to keep it hot. So I mean, there are some other sources out there that are safe, and China is, of course, leading the way because America is in the pockets of the nuclear power industry, and they don't want to even explore it.
Right, right. I don't know about that technology, thorium. That's the first I've heard of that, but
yeah,
that's interesting. I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah. From a military,
thorium, look it up. It's great.
Okay.
From a military perspective, I wonder how long before, whether it's us or the Russians or the Chinese, hop on the idea of using an alternative fuel, much in the same way that Winston Churchill got Britain off of coal because he said it was just utterly impractical to keep ships running on coal when oil was so much lighter.
That's right.
Because one of the problems with the oil, with the gasoline and even diesel-based systems that we have now, is our military is entirely beholden to supply lines. And actually, it was today the Pakistanis reopened the supply route going to Afghanistan, and the first thing that happens is the Taliban burned 12 of the fuel trucks, which means that even though the supply line's open, none of the gas is going through the Khyber Pass, which means our helicopters can't take off, our planes, everybody's on restricted, you know, movement because you're at the mercy of your supply lines.
We just have 8 minutes left, so I just want to let listeners know that if they want to give a call into Car Bob before the end of the show, give us a ring now at 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756. This is In Context, and we're on every Monday from noon to 1, WPKN's live public affairs call-in show.
There's a lot of issues out there. You know, it's... I truly believe what needs to be done is the people need to wake up. They need to take action. You know, just don't keep going to the gas station and paying a ridiculous price.
And it's really hard when our media is controlled by oil. Our energy policy is controlled by the oil companies. We saw under Cheney with the secret meetings. Our healthcare policy is controlled by insurance companies.
Exactly.
Which you saw with the meetings that Obama held before he put out his program. So how the heck do we break out of this box, we individuals?
Right.
It's very, very difficult.
And you just mentioned that, and I just want to throw this out. I don't think we have a healthcare issue. We have a health insurance problem.
Right.
We don't have a health care problem. We have a health insurance problem.
And these guys who are making the money, they're designing the policy,
exactly,
the programs.
Yeah.
Who are they looking out for?
It is so crazy out there.
We spend enough money. We did a show on Obamacare recently, and we spent $2.5 trillion on health care in the United States. It's about almost 60-70% more than the Europeans spend per capita.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't cover everybody, and they do.
Right.
So obviously somebody who's designed the system is not looking out for the average American.
No, it's all about the money.
I think we have a call.
We actually have two callers.
Excellent.
The first one is Mark from Sherman. Go ahead, Mark. You're on the air with WPKN.
Hi, Mark.
Yes. Good afternoon. I'm calling with a technology question concerning electric vehicles, or any vehicle, really, I guess. I'm wondering why they can't harness the power from the spinning wheels to generate the battery. Like, you know how bicycles, old English racers used to have that little generator you put on the wheel and the light would go on? I'm wondering why they can't take the drag from the spinning wheels, if it's front-wheel drive car, take the energy from the back wheels that's just spinning around and somehow charge the battery with that energy.
There'd be too much energy. There's too much energy loss. There's no free lunch. There's no free lunch, really. What the electric vehicles do is they will use the mass of the moving vehicle so that when you apply the brakes, your brakes really aren't what's stopping the car. They turn the electric motor into a generator, and that generator will slow the car down while it produces electricity to feed back into the batteries.
Right, so you're actually expending energy to make the car move in order to make the dynamo charge.
Exactly, yeah, that's it.
Energy loss there.
That's what it comes down to.
Well, thank you very much, Mark.
That's where the break is.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you very much for your call. And our next caller is Sally from Kent. Go ahead, Sally. You're on the air with WPKN.
Hi, thanks. I'm actually pulled over in my car, so I hope the reception's okay.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, you sound great.
Excuse me?
Oh, you sound great. Go ahead.
Okay. Anyway, I know you're talking about hybrids and all that, but I can't afford that. I was just wondering about the Mazda 2 touring car. It's like a 2012 I've been looking at. It's supposed to get great gas mileage, and it's affordable. But I don't really, you know, I haven't driven one now. I'm just reading about them. Do you have any thoughts on the Mazda?
That's a new model, I think, in the last year or two. I really don't know a lot about the Mazda 2. That's a new series car that they've introduced, actually. It's smaller than the 3. It's a car that was produced in Japan, and it was sold in Europe, et cetera, and in Japan, but not here because they felt it was a little bit too small. But now they're starting to bring in these smaller vehicles like the A3 and the A2 are starting to come in from Audi. You know, so basically I'm sure it's not a bad car. It's just a smaller car.
Bob, in terms of a most economical fuel-efficient car, what comes to mind?
Yeah.
I mean, it used to be the Volkswagen Golf diesel or the Volkswagen Jetta diesel, and they are still pretty high on the list.
What does that get in terms of?
They're in the 40s.
Okay.
They're in the
40s. This car says 17,000. You know.
And what's their mileage? Probably around 36.
38 on the highway.
Yeah, right. 38 on the highway, probably around 32 in the city.
How much does how much does the Volt run price wise?
The Volt is ridiculously priced, about 42.
Yeah. Oh, I'll forget about it.
Yeah. And that's too high.
Yeah,
way too high.
Well, it got great reviews on the internet by consumers, but I don't know.
Right.
Thought I'd ask you. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Sally.
Thank you, Sally.
Thanks very much for your call, Sally.
Okay. Bye bye.
The problem I have with the Volt, and not the bad mouth GM, but the issue is their battery pack was made as a structural member of the car, and consequently, when they're being hit in a side impact, the cars are usually burning up a couple of weeks later because it breaks down the integrity of the battery. There's an internal short circuit in the battery, to make it simple, and then the battery overheats and catches on fire. Every other hybrid manufacturer that I know of at this point, the battery pack is not a structural member of the vehicle.
It sounds like in some respects they were ahead of the game 15 years ago with the EV1.
Yep.
Like, where have they gone? Are they getting 40 miles? I'm not impressed.
No. So, it's not a bad car, and it's a nice way to come in, but I think they could have done a better job.
Yeah, how do you explain the fact that technology isn't as good now as it was in the late 90s? I mean, is it a political thing?
I think it's part of it might be politics. I think most of it is greed. I think most of it's about money. It seems to what it all boils down to is money.
So they're looking for the car, ultimately, that has the highest profit margin, the cheapest to make, and the highest price, like the truck.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what most manufacturers look at.
We have just a couple minutes left.
We have 2 minutes left.
We have just 2 minutes left. Okay.
You want to be the last caller on the show? Go ahead.
It's 203-336-9756. So we have time for just one more quick call. One of the things that's been pushed, of course, is ethanol in recent years. Has that helped the fuel efficiency situation, or is that just a boondoggle for farmers?
I think it's a mistake. I think it helped out the farmers in getting rid of their crops.
Raise the price of corn.
It did do a little bit, but you have to remember the energy content, British thermal units of alcohol, is a whole heck of a lot less than gasoline. So,
all this time, I've seen a total of one service station that sells ethanol, and it's in Irvington, New York.
Right.
That is the only one I've ever seen.
There's nothing in the Northeast. It's mostly in the Midwest, Ohio, Illinois, out there where they grow the corn, and that's where the plants are to process it. But
isn't it true that it's a net emissions loss in the amount of hydrocarbons produced to
produce it?
treat the ethanol, and then by the time it actually gets to your tank, you've already actually outburned the entire tank of gas?
That's what I've heard. I've heard the same thing.
So it's yet another genius George W. Bush maneuver.
So you've been listening to In Context. Our guest, special guest this week has been Corbob Costanzo. His show is on WPKN on Saturday morning from 9 to 11, every other Saturday. And you call in. It's a call-in show. And you have any kind of problem, question about car technology, about your own car, you can call in and speak to Corbob.
And we try to help you get your car back on the road.
Yeah, so I look forward to it. I enjoy listening to your show. I learn a lot about cars, too. And we'll be on next Monday. At noon ourselves, and the following week after that, we have our monthly war report, and we'll be getting into detail what's going on in Syria. And coming up next is Rick Petrone with Jazz Sound, so please stay tuned for that show.
And find us on Facebook at In Context, and look for our website, incontextreport.com.
Thank you very much for your time.
And I'd like to thank you, gentlemen, for having me.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Carl.
Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.